Hello again and welcome to the Peter Mackay Motorsport Podcast. Thanks very much again for tuning in to our little podcast. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. As you may have noticed from our Twitter page, we have launched our own website, www.petermackaymotorsport.com, where you'll find all of the previous shows and also some new articles as well, written by myself with opinion and views on global motorsport. We'd love to hear your feedback on those. All of the written articles will be available as an audio file if you want to digest those on the move, or if you're hard of sight as well, they will be available for you in audio format. So go and check it out and do please get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. So today we're going to talk about that wonderful MotoGP race from Austria yesterday afternoon, and what a cracker it was. And ever since the Red Bull Ring in Austria came onto the calendar, it has provided such fantastic racing, always classic battles. And we've seen in the past that it's been Marc Marquez and Andrea Dovizioso who have really been coming to the fore and battling with each other. Well, we saw exactly the same happening yesterday. After a slightly flat race in Brno, a little bit processional, which is not usual at Brno, but Austria certainly made up for it in spades, which was just brilliant to see. And actually, I don't know if we really saw the result that maybe everybody was expecting. Andrea Dovizioso and the Ducati came through for the win, narrowly beating Marc Marquez with a last corner manoeuvre, which we'll talk lots about later on. But we had Fabio Quartararo in third, the very promising young Frenchman, doing really well on that Petronas Yamaha. And we had Valentino Rossi back fresh after his summer break in fourth place, beating his teammate Maverick Vinales, which is a great turnaround. So we'll come on to those as we go through the show. So let's talk about that battle, shall we? Dovi versus Marquez. It's something we've been treated to so many times over the years. The two of them, two very different approaches to racing a motorbike. Marquez is all action. He's all over the place and often out in front. Dovi, they call him the professor. Some people have actually likened him to an Alain Prost, where he's always thinking ahead and always getting what he can out of the package. And if he will not pull a silly move on anybody ever, you just won't see Dovi doing that. But in a dogfight, interestingly, whenever Dovi and Marquez have gone toe-to-toe, Dovi has been the one who's come out on top, which is quite interesting. And we saw all race long Dovi and Marc Marquez in a world of their own. Let's talk about Marquez first of all. I mean, he's the only guy who would appear to be able to ride that Honda at the moment. He's the only guy anywhere near the front of the pack while riding a Honda. And I think it just cements just how special that guy actually is. He's only ever lost one championship in his whole career since 2013, and that was in 2015 when the Honda was an absolute monster to ride, it would appear. But Marquez has been absolutely incredible this year and won a lot of races, a lot of pole positions. But Dovi, he really kept him honest yesterday and, of course, prevailed. I often ask myself, is Marquez the greatest of all time? Well, I certainly think he should be in that conversation now. Right up there with all the very best. Mike Hailwood, Valentino Rossi, Mick Doohan, Wayne Rainey, people like that. I think he's right. He should be considered in those conversations. Of course, it is very difficult to determine who is the greatest of all time in MotoGP or in the Motorcycle World Championship, because there's so many variables, the circuits they raced on, the bikes they rode. But I think it's very hard to deny that MotoGP could not be more competitive at the moment. But I think Marquez is a guy who, purely through his riding skill and prowess, he's standing quite far above the rest at the moment. However, one thing that actually, I might be talking rubbish here, probably quite likely, but what I noticed is two laps towards the end, if those of you have watched the race yet, if not, please go and watch it, because it's fantastic. But coming into the penultimate lap, Marc Marquez did something which is, unfortunately, was stuff that we see a lot less from him now, thankfully, but it was something that they're still there in the Marc Marquez. So they came out of the last corner. Andrea Dovizioso got a really good run on Marc Marquez, got a better exit out of that last corner, and he pulled up along beside. And Marquez knew he was there. Marquez could hear him, and you'd hear that Ducati coming past you, and he could notice he was coming past him, and he moved across to Holt to cover his line. Fair enough, but he took it far too far, in my opinion. I think he moved far too far over and virtually had Dovi in the wall. And I'd love to see the telemetry to see if Dovi actually had to lift off the gas or not. But I think it was one of those things that went unnoticed in the excitement of the last lap battle. And really, I think it's something that should be addressed. Perhaps it has in behind closed door in race direction, but it doesn't seem to have been published. So apart from that, it was a great race with two brilliant riders battling it out. But I think that was the only thing that maybe blotted Marquez's copybook slightly. But as I said, this is sort of things we used to see a lot, and we're seeing them a lot less. And it is quite... It must be quite daunting for the other manufacturers and the other riders, particularly along the MotoGP grid, who are thinking, this guy just keeps getting better and better. What can we do? And who is going to challenge Marc Marquez? We've seen him run away with the title this year. I mean, I think he's long gone. Is it going to be an Alex Rins on the Suzuki? Possibly. Is it going to be a Fabio Quartararo on a factory Yamaha? Might be. Is it going to be Johann Zarco on a KTM? No, we'll talk about that later. But it is interesting. Is there anybody who can come up against Marquez and really fight against him over a season? The only time we've seen someone beat him over a season was in 2015. So it's becoming... it's amazing. We're in a golden era of MotoGP. Lots of different winners, lots of bikes at the front. But through that golden era, we've seen a guy win every single title from 2013 right through to now, of course, apart from 2015 when Jorge Lorenzo was triumphant. So it's amazing how you can have one guy winning all the titles, but still having such tight competition at the top and manufacturers, different manufacturers challenging for the win. Of course, this year we've had Yamaha win, we've had Vinales at Assen, we've had Alex Rins on the Suzuki at Kota, and then we've seen Ducati win Mugello with Petrucci and, of course, Dovi at the weekend there in Austria, and Marquez doing all the winning for for Honda. So let's see. But Marquez, you got to take your hat off to the guy. He's had a great season. Dovi, on the other hand, on the Ducati, he's not had his best of seasons, not been the same dizzying heights as he's had over the last couple of seasons, where him and Marquez seem to be having a Hollywood battle every single weekend. I think this race, though, obviously with the layout of the Red Bull Ring in Austria, it's a very much a drag strip circuit, huge long straights with big elevation changes, and that really does suit the Ducati bike. But what you noticed was Dovi's strength in the final sector. If you go back and watch some of the onboards when Marquez is following Dovi, and you look at the sheer amount of distance that Dovi was making up on the brakes, I think he was making about 4 bike lengths up on the brakes on that second to last corner. And Dovi just braking so nice, straight and true. And I think that strength in the last sector of the lap really won him that race, because he, coming into the latter part of that last lap, he still had quite a bit to bridge the gap to Marquez, but that last sector, he closed up so much time, and that move to win the race, oh my goodness me. Talk about clean, careful, executed, but brutal all the same. He lined Marquez up, came up behind his back tire and just slipped up the inside on the brakes. He must have been close to crashing, but you would never know. Dovi just so smooth, they didn't touch, and through he went. Now, Marquez, I'm convinced that Marquez made it difficult for Dovi, but I don't think he, again, we're seeing a mature Marquez. I think a Marquez of 2 or 3 years ago would have slammed the door on Dovi and they would have made contact. I have no doubt. But I think Marquez thought, okay, he's going up the inside here. I'll see if I can get a run on him up to the line. I've got a championship to worry about here. Second is good enough for me, and I'm still extending my lead at the top of the table. And I think that had to be going through Marc Marquez's mind. I've no doubt about that. But actually, to be honest, if that is the case, well done him on making it difficult for Dovi to get past, but not, you know, dangerously cutting across, ironically, like he'd done a lap before along the wall, but that's another matter. So, great performance from those guys. It was great to see a proper ding-dong in MotoGP again. It was just fantastic. Mentioned the Yamahas earlier on. What a great turnaround for them. I mean, this track in particular, you could not pick a worse track for Yamaha. It was very, very visible on the straights just how much time they're losing down the straights in MotoGP. They're so down on power, so down on top speed, and that is really affecting the Yamaha riders. However, it must mean that in the twisty bits, of which there aren't many twisty bits at the Red Bull Ring, but it must mean that their bike is still really, really good through the turns. And I think a win at Assen is always a good good sign of that. So it was brilliant to see the young guy, the young star, Fabio Quartararo, coming through with a great podium and a brilliant qualifying performance as well, to qualify in second. That kid is going places for sure. I must be honest, last year I was at the Barcelona MotoGP when he won the Moto2 race, and everyone was talking about he's going to go to MotoGP, and I thought, Quartararo, I'm not sure. I mean, burst onto the scene, multiple Spanish champion, the youngest guy to race in Moto3, and he was competitive in Moto3 straight away, but then he had a number of seasons sort of in the background and changed teams a lot and seemed to make some strange choices for going to teams. But he went to the Speed Up team and won a couple of races last year. But even though when he got that contract, I thought, I'm not sure, but my God, I've been made to look silly. And I think if a lot of people were honest, they maybe would have been thinking the same things, because the results certainly didn't add up. But from winter testing onwards, everyone was like, okay, Quartararo, he's the real deal. And I think he's really proved himself. Great results. He's not crashed a lot. I mean, for a rookie to keep the bike upright that much and be that fast, I think he's going to be really, really special. But I think you also got to take your hat off to that Petronas Yamaha team, because I don't think it can be underestimated how difficult it is to put together a brand new MotoGP team, all the personnel you need, logistics, all these things. It's a completely different ball game to Moto2 or Moto3, different electronics, different everything. I would suspect that they've had a lot of help from Yamaha, and rightly so. I think if you're going to be a team who's going to fund that level of project, and it's obviously very good marketing for Yamaha, particularly having a connection to Malaysia, which is a huge market for any motorcycle manufacturer, but Yamaha particularly. I remember a couple of years ago being in Kuala Lumpur on business, and the amount of guys on what they call underbone scooters, who all of them, they should just be in MotoGP, because these guys, you've never seen riding like it through traffic. So the market is huge out there, and to have a young, exciting rider like Quartararo getting good results, shaking up the order a little bit on that Petronas Yamaha bike, I think it's a really good combination, and I'm delighted to see that it's been a success. Certainly miss Tech 3 being up the front. I think they were brilliant as well, but I'm sure their project with KTM will come good in the end. Speaking of KTM, there's quite a lot to talk about. They certainly, they're like, this is our home race, we're going to dominate all the headlines. I wonder if that was deliberate. My goodness me, what KTM? Let's start with the positives of KTM. Their young up-and-coming star, Miguel Oliveira, what a guy he is. I mean, nearly won the Moto3 World Championship back in 2015 when Danny Kent won on the last lap. With an amazing strong end to the season, and he's just maturely worked his way up the ladder. And of all the interviews I've listened to with him and all the TV coverage I've seen about him, he seems like a very mature young man. He's the only guy riding at that level from Portugal as well, which is another thing. And I believe he's training to be a dentist, which is a clever guy, getting himself another trade for when he retires from MotoGP. But if his current form of his first season in MotoGP is anything to go by, I think he'll be earning himself a juicy salary where he might not need to become a dentist. You never know. But yesterday, he was top KTM, which was very impressive, and came in eighth in his best performance in a MotoGP race. Well done, Miguel Oliveira. That will make Hervé Poncharal so proud, so happy, and really showing that KTM bike, they are getting there. It's a long project, it's a difficult project. You just have to look at how long it took Ducati to get to the front of MotoGP. Of course, after the Stoner era, albeit. But if you look at the distance that they've come, I think it's very impressive. And they've signed a deal to extend their contract by a further 5 years, so they're a total of 7 more years guaranteed contract with Dorna. So they've obviously got great long-term plans for the future. One guy who was due to be part of those plans was Johann Zarco, and it really is very sad, actually, that the relationship between Zarco and KTM will be concluding at the end of the year at the latest. There's rumblings that Johann Zarco might not even finish the season, but that would be a shame if that were the case. But Johann Zarco has publicly said he's asked KTM to get out of his contract a year early. KTM have agreed with that, but clearly there's no love lost between the two parties. It's such a pity, because we saw such fantastic performances from Johann Zarco in his early days in MotoGP on the Tech 3 Yamaha. Some really outstanding performances, and we thought, here we go, this is the next guy. But it seems that Johann Zarco, he's had a long career in Grand Prix motorcycle racing, and it seems like everything around him has to be perfect. You know, he's one of these riders where everything's got to be in place, and when it is, he'll be almost unbeatable. You just saw him in Moto2 with the guidance of Aki Ayo, and that team there built up around him, and he did a super job and won two titles in a row and won lots and lots of races. So he's no idiot. He's not forgot how to ride a motorbike, but clearly the match between Johann Zarco and KTM has not been one that's going to bear fruit, unfortunately. Now, reportedly, he had an offer on the table from Repsol Honda last year. It wasn't taken for whatever reason. Apparently, he already had his KTM deal signed when that offer came through. I don't know. I think it's very difficult to know what the true story is here. But what does Zarco do from here? Well, it's very, very difficult, because it's been confirmed over the weekend that Jorge Lorenzo is not going to pursue this return to Ducati, and I think that's very good news, which we'll come on to in a minute. So he will stay at Repsol Honda next year if he returns from injury. I would suspect he will. So where does Johann Zarco go? Ducati is a closed shop. Yamaha is looking like a closed shop. It looks like it will be Rossi and Vinales again next year. Suzuki, definitely a closed shop. Mir and Rins both doing a very good job. Pramac Ducati, full. So it's very, very tricky to see where Johann Zarco will go next. Over to World Superbike, possibly, but again, where do you go in World Superbike? Yamaha looks pretty locked down with Vandermark and Lowe's. Maybe on the new Honda, perhaps, who knows? Kawasaki, it seems like every man and his dog has been linked to that seat alongside Jonathan Rea. I feel sorry for Leon Haslam, actually, having all these different people linked to his seat. But you can see I'm digressing here. I actually don't know where Johann Zarco could go racing next year. He's French, maybe he'll go endurance racing. I'm sure, you never know. British Superbikes... Scott Redding, he seems to be working for him. You couldn't wipe the smile off Scott Redding's face at the moment, doing all this winning on that wonderful Ducati Panigale V4R. Who knows? I have to say, I'm drawing a blank here on where Zarco can go, and I think that's a crying shame, and it shows you how much of a shark pit the top level of motorcycle racing is. You've got a guy like Johann Zarco, who's podium man in MotoGP, lots of pole positions, double Moto2 world champion. Where does he go? perhaps going back to Moto2 is his best option and goes to try and win another title there. We shall have to wait and see. I wish I knew more, but I'm sure that will come out soon. So, contracts for next year, well, they were the talk of the town at the weekend, weren't they? There was a rumour brewing that Jorge Lorenzo was trying to get out of his Honda contract a year early to make a shock return to Ducati. I have to say I'm actually really glad that that is not going to happen, because Jack Miller, I think, has done everything right at Pramac Ducati. He's served his apprenticeship and he's going to get some great equipment for next year. And for months now, that deal has supposedly been ready for the pen to go to paper. And I felt terrible for poor old Jack when that this speculation started to rise. And it must be so difficult when you're a young rider coming up through MotoGP and you're promised a ride, and then all of a sudden one of the established old guard want to move bikes, and that's you out of a seat. We've seen it in the past, but I'm glad that that seems to have figured itself out. So that all of a sudden the contracts have calmed back down again. So hopefully we'll see a bit more of the status quo. I think it's always good for the sport if you see riders get to at least have 2 years on a bike. It allows them to adapt. It allows them to be able to compete a bit better in that second year. And then next year, my goodness me, I think we're going to have the silly season of all silly seasons. Will Valentino Rossi retire? Will he not retire? I honestly can't tell you. I think clearly at the moment the Yamaha is not a winning bike at every race as it was in 2015, for example. And what we saw in 2015 was Rossi nearly won the title, and we saw him with some other success after that too. I think a lot of whether Rossi will continue will a lot depend on how he gels with the bike and how Yamaha developed the bike and how ambitious they are to get back to the front of MotoGP. I think if Rossi's if he's scoring even podiums, I think we're going to see him till at least the end of next year. But let's wait and see. I think Yamaha have publicly said that Rossi is not their future anymore. I mean, obviously he's in his 40s, but I think they are having a wise old fox like him in the team is no bad thing. But there was also little rumblings going around. Why was Bernie Eccleston why was he there? He was interviewed by Neil Hodgson on the grid before the race and was talking about potentially getting a team in MotoGP. Goodness me, that's a scary thought. He was seen chatting to Valentino Rossi. Now, it's not unusual for someone as high profile of Valentino Rossi and someone as high profile of Bernie Eccleston to compare notes or just have a polite chat in the paddock. I think there can be a lot read into that. But would Bernie Eccleston coming into MotoGP be a good thing? No, I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think the way that Dorna have handled MotoGP and the way that they've dragged it out of a really dark time only 7 years ago, when you're talking 13 bikes on the grid, now we've got oversubscribed grid with 22 bikes. I think the decisions that Bernie Eccleston's made in Formula One, you look at the state that sport's in at the moment, and I think that's part of his legacy, to be honest with you. So I think hopefully the status quo remains. We're very, very lucky with the state of MotoGP at the moment, and I have to say I cannot wait to get to our home race at Silverstone. Hopefully, for goodness sake, I hope we get better weather than last year. Hopefully the new track surface is a bit friendlier to the MotoGP bikes, but we'll wait and see. It's an amazing racetrack to watch any racing car or any racing bike on, but MotoGP bikes in particular are seriously special around Silverstone, so I just cannot wait for that. That's all for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Keep an eye out on our new website, www.petermackaymotorsport.com, for new articles, new podcasts coming up, and also keep an eye on our Twitter page as well. We would be delighted to hear from you. You can contact us through the website. Please let us know what we're doing well, what we're doing badly, what you would like to see on the podcast, or if any questions you'd like us to read out on the show. We'd be delighted to hear from you. But that's all from me, and we'll speak to you again soon. Thanks.